This is the London FinTech Podcast, brought to you by your host, Mike Ballaman, bridging the worlds of suits and t-shirts, of finance and technology, bringing you insights, stories, and inspiration from the golden age of opportunity and innovation happening in London right now.
Hi, this is Mike Ballaman, and this is London FinTech Podcast, episode 135, brought to you in association with Smart Pension. And I'm delighted to be joined today by Louise Hill, co-founder of GoHenry, to discuss children in the digital age. GoHenry themselves have a payment card designed for children, digital pocket money if you like, and 700,000 clients to date. In terms of the big picture that we're here to discuss today, however, tech, as you may have noticed, like all change, introduces positives and negatives. In terms of the children, the positives are that these new generations have grown up surrounded by tech, and so should be dead good at it. Maybe in a decade or so, we'll get really good podcasters. On the shadow side, as we've touched on in passing a few times, the digital world has created a nightmare for mental health in the young. Few families remain totally unaffected, and it's super important that we solve that problem. I, for one, would otherwise vote to repeal the interweb if we don't, as too much pain and suffering, too many suicides. Anyway, let's not emphasise the very worst aspect of tech as a whole at the get-go. Louise is a parent herself, as well as an interweb user, as well as one of those relatively rare breeds of female fintech founders, and has seen this subject from all angles. Let's leave that at a short intro, and we'll look at five key areas in the show: social media, mental health, tech savvy, schools parents, and money. Plenty to talk about, so let's get on with the show. Hi Louise, thanks for joining me today.
Hello, nice to be here.
Yes, and it's one of these very rare days when we're expecting really super hot weather in England. We're an angel at the moment and it's still relatively cool, but we've got a few days of over 30 coming up, and I think I saw something saying Paris might hit an all-time record of 41 or 42, which is a bit crazy. And the summer we've had this year has been this sort of modern pattern of what I call Icelandic weather, when the jet stream comes too low and we get sort of permanent cloud and we have a record rain in June or something, we get soaked, we never see the sun for ages, followed by sort of a few days of burps of super hot weather in the meantime. So I come into London and you commute into London every day. You were telling me that actually when the weather gets like this, you take the bus back to Waterloo and the sort of countryside where you come from.
The heat coming out of Angel Tube Station is incredible when it gets to about 6:30 at night. So yes, I walk a little bit further up the road and get the bus back to Waterloo.
Yes, I saw something a while ago, actually. I've completely forgotten the stats, like most things, but how the tube over the last century has actually heated up the soil in London. One of the problems they've got is it's something like 7, 8 or 10 degrees hotter underground now because the tube has not been venting enough heat over a century. So all the soil is that much warmer. So apart from the fact the tunnels are too small and there's no sort of vents, as you get in sensible places like Singapore or Hong Kong or stuff like that, it's just hotter down there. And I've noticed that myself. You can come into London, it's not been particularly nice weather for a while, but actually it's still really hot in the central line.
Maybe that means there'll be some tropical plants growing in the parks soon.
Yes, indeed. And talking about tropics, you were telling me, it actually may not be in the tropics, you were telling me that you're planning on cycling around Cuba. I thought Cuba was quite large. That was quite a long way, isn't it?
Yes, it's a trip that's down one of the coasts of Cuba. It's somewhere I've wanted to go for years. And a friend of mine has managed to work out a week off in the lead up to Easter next year, so it's a little while away. But yeah, we're planning to cycle across part of Cuba.
And how many miles is that?
Do you know what? I've not actually added it up.
That's probably a good idea, actually.
Probably very wise. It's 9 days, and I think it's between... The maximum is 45 kilometres in one day, which, given that I'm not a super fit cycle freak, is probably way too much for me. But I'll take some padded shorts.
There are different styles of this. There's a sort of cycle the length of Vietnam, which is a hell of a long way. And some buddies of mine used to go every summer. They're older than me then. They used to go on some cycling tour in Italy, northern Italy, which sounded quite tough, but it actually wasn't, because he got all your kit taken and you'd cycle to sort of somewhere for breakfast and then you'd cycle somewhere for lunch. You have a 15-course lunch and then you sort of fall asleep and then you sort of cycle another half an hour. So your mileage may vary. Well, your mileage doesn't vary. Well, your mileage does vary, actually. Your mileage varies, but also the experience. I don't know whether you're doing the gastronomic cycle tour or the sort of pedal to the metal tour.
I'm definitely not carrying all my kit with me. It's being taken on to the next stop point. Yeah.
Excellent. So in terms of your career journey to Angel, what was it you were doing in the past, and why was it that one day you suddenly woke up, or you and a couple of your chums as you were then, suddenly woke up and thought, I know what we'll do today, let's all phone Go Henry and have a sort of digital pocket money.
My background is e-commerce. In fact, I usually tell people it's e-commerce when it used to be called home shopping. So went into retail out of university, ended up working for a big American consultancy company, which got brought in to help launch Next Directory when that very, very first launched. And I spent 15 months in Bradford. Knew I was in trouble when I had a nightmare about standing up to do a presentation, and I was looked down, I was wearing a suit made out of the hotel bedspread. I'd obviously been there far too long. But that sort of got me into home shopping, which became e-com.
When was that transition from home shopping, I don't know, catalogues or whatever, back in the day, in the 70s and things?
Gosh, it was mid-90s.
That's quite early then, really. And then Amazon was around, because I went indie
Amazon
in 98, got my own office, had a laptop, had time on my hands, so started sort of doing something other than work with half the day. And Amazon was there, but there wasn't that much more. I mean, it was before the sort of dot-com bubble. And
absolutely.
There were these retailers who wanted to sell all the clothes and people chucking tons of money.
My very first business was actually an online retailer and catalogue called Manners. And we launched that in 1998. I always remember the year because I was pregnant with my first child when we were out trying to raise the funds to launch it.
That's multitasking for you.
It is, isn't it? I have to confess, I used to make my business partner walk into the room first so that people didn't kind of go, oh my God, what's happening here? Yeah. Yeah, e-commerce. What happened then was an awful lot of the bricks and mortar retailers, the John Lewis, Marks and Spencer, Debenhams, people like that, obviously wanted to get into that space, and they hired people from the home shopping industry to help them sort out how they needed to change their retail distribution, how they needed to talk to customers online, all that kind of thing. And I spent the best part of a decade helping a lot of big name retailers do exactly that.
And it's obviously a sort of, you could write a whole book on this, but what were the principal kind of changes or lessons that people, or big ones or small ones, learned over that decade, the first decade of e-commerce? I mean, roughly, we're talking 20 years ago, so we've had a couple of decades by
now.
Yeah,
we are.
Give in because Amazon will just trash you if you're doing most things anyway. Or I think in America, Amazon does something like 90% of books and a hell of a large percentage of all sorts of stuff, and obviously big percentage of cloud and this kind of thing.
Yeah, I think the biggest message that we home shoppers, e-commerce people, were trying to get across to bricks and mortar retailers was the importance of showing the product clearly online. I can remember having lots of, not quite boardroom battles, but very senior level battles where they wanted, you know, beautifully shot kind of TV ad like pictures of an outfit, and we were like, you have to be able to see what the waistband is, you have to be able to see if they're wide leg or narrow leg trousers, otherwise your returns will go through the roof. The practical stuff, which is everybody knows today, but didn't back then.
Yes, that's interesting, actually. So going back to returns and that, the thing that most naive founders fail to understand, which is why I always recommend that the majority of people, if they leave university and want to be in this world, should work for a good company and see how things work before they even found their own.
Or which bits don't work.
Exactly. The important bits that don't work. There was an idea that, you know, you're 21 or you're 18 or you're 15 and just go and form a company. Some people can do that, but very few can, because
I think it's rare.
It's like, oh, I'm going to go into the restaurant trade. How hard can it be? Well, the answer is quite hard. And why don't I actually work for somebody else first? But the thing that I think is very easy to forget, and every founder knows very rapidly, is execution. You have a great concept. You can be a sort of strategic consultant for McKinsey and, oh, there's a gap in the market and da-di-da-di-da-di, we'll do this and we'll do that. But actually, it's execution, isn't it, really?
It is. And my background, I think, helps with that because I've always been in operations. So I've been the part of the business that
makes things happen,
runs the contact
tries to
centre,
fix it when it doesn't,
sets up the supply chain, puts the processes in place. And, yeah, I can organise stuff.
So you were home shopping, e-commercing, and then one morning woke up and thought, I'll form Go Henry with a couple of mates this morning?
Or? The story is literally I was stood with a bunch of parents from the same school watching my son, as it happened, play in a school football match. Their sons were there too, obviously. It was the Christmas when everybody had been bought iPods. Funny now, I was saying this the other day, you know, they've been and gone, haven't they? But everybody had been bought iPods, and like a bit of an idiot, I had given both of my kids the login to my iTunes account, and they were merrily downloading music.
And you were having to work overtime to pay for it all?
At a rate of not. Not a huge amount, thankfully. They never cleaned me out like some of the stories you hear in the media. But quite clearly, they had no clue that it was money. And come Saturday mornings, I was kind of standing there going, so normally I would give you £5, but you spent £4.80 on iTunes. ATP, a little sad face in front of me, and I'm the bad guy again. And we started up a conversation about were the other parents finding the same thing, and out came tales about the £500 bill on Xbox and somebody who'd bought something ridiculous on Amazon. And, you know, clearly their parents were struggling with how do you give your child some freedom online and access to buying certain things online without giving them your credit card, without them making great big mistakes. And that was the seed of the idea.
And we're having quite a good conversation beforehand of being averse to this sort of identitarianism around gender and all that. You've got this sort of mixed things going on at the moment. On one hand, there isn't such a thing as gender, but on the other hand, things sort of, you know, boys are bad or girls are good, or anyway, all this kind of nonsense. But notwithstanding all that, is there a difference in general between girls and boys? And I say that because my girls didn't do Xbox and all that kind of stuff, and a lot of their girlfriends didn't do Xbox. It was more of a boy thing and that kind of stuff. And also, there's an extent, and this is, quotes, sexist, but it's a generalisation based on my experiences, that by and large, girls can often be more conscientious than boys.
There's some really interesting ideas there. We actually released a youth economy report last week that is the biggest ever study done into real data, actual data, rather than surveys.
Rather than, I feel that it's this.
On child spending. And yes, it bears out some of the stereotypes, but actually it crashes through some of the others. Boys, 41% of their money on online spending, higher than girls, significantly higher than girls. Teenage girls, 2/3 of their money is being spent on the high street. It's quite interesting, given the June Retail Consortium figures showed the biggest ever drop in high street spend. So, yeah, there are some of the stereotypes, if you like, are borne out. But girls are shopping online. Both are downloading music in particular as a service. But boys, it's gaming. One of the stats that stuck with me from the report, and there aren't too many that I know off by heart, online gaming spend peaks for boys at age 13.
Interesting.
With an incredible almost £200 a year.
Wow.
And girls in the same age group, £4.20.
That's the kind of thing I was thinking. And I saw actually over the weekend, goodness knows where, came back to marketing. Marketers are always very creative, that these games, which cost an astronomical sum of money, they're sold on, and you'll probably know all this stuff, but it's CPEH, which I hadn't come across before, which is cost per entertainment hour. So young Johnny, age 13, might come to Mummy and say, I want this game, it's 99 quid. And Mummy might say, 99 quid, that's a lot of money. Or Daddy. But then says, oh yes, but I'm going to use it for 2,000 hours, so it's 10p an hour.
That sounds very much like the justification I've done to myself in justifying an expensive coat. You know, the price per wear is always a trick you're taught to justify an expensive purchase. Yeah, same
exactly.
Principle.
So, of course, it peaks at different ages and different phenomena, and also the internet's been changing a lot over the last 20-odd years.
Vastly.
Fortunately, my girls are quite well trained these days, and they will send me a link for what they want for the birthday or Christmas. And then, of course, a lot of it is now clothes, which it wouldn't have been 10 years ago. And 10 years ago, it wouldn't have been that easy to buy stuff from all these retailers and all that kind of thing. But anyway, putting aside the particular patterns of expenditure, we're starting with money, but why not? What is the underlying problem? So I never, fortunately, never had this problem with the girls spending sort of loads of money online. I don't think they actually spent anything online. Is it the fact that, and obviously you've got loads of clients that have this issue, is it the fact that somehow money doesn't seem real when it's just something online and you press a button? Because I assume that the average child, given a fiver, even at the age of 10, knows what £5 is and doesn't spend 10 because they can't and stuff like this.
Really, that was the fundamental part of why we started GoHenry. We looked first to see if there was anything out there that helped you teach your kids to manage money.
Was it particularly what you started, and I mean, you may have found different things and it changed over time. Was it the question that children need to be taught about money and being responsible with it, which has always been the case for 10,000 years? Or was it that, let's call it e-money?
Yes, digital money.
Digital money
somehow
doesn't feel as real as coins in your hand.
Yes, and they had no way to spend it safely. There was no way that a parent could let their child shop online in a safe way.
Right.
It was give them your credit card, give them your login to whatever, and let them do their worst. And sometimes their worst could be pretty expensive.
So the virtualization of money implicit in buying stuff on the internet was one of the major challenges.
Yes.
And as you say, in limit, because like you give your kid 5 £1 coins, he can't spend 6
spend
at the sweet shop.
No, but you give them, you attach your credit card to your Amazon
with your
account,
15 grand limit,
give them a login. And there's one wonderful story about a little boy who ordered an ambulance on eBay and it showed up.
Oh, wow. Brilliant.
There's some great headlines if you go looking for them, yeah. Or, you know, the £6,000 bill on one of the play boxes. Yeah, there's some big spends out there. So there's protecting the parent's wallet, but actually there's also the child understanding, the young person understanding, that's money, and it's a finite pot. And, you know, I put that alongside, I remember saying to my son at one point, he was badgering me for some particularly expensive pair of jeans, and I said, I can't afford them at the moment. I cannot afford them. He said, well, why don't you go and get some more money out of the machine? And I thought, bless, he's, however old he was, 11 or something.
19.
He's clearly not got a clue that behind that machine is a finite pot that's called my bank account. And how do we do that? How do we teach kids that? Because they've effectively been left behind. We are using cards, we were using contactless, we're shopping online. Kids were getting little piles of money. And there was a disconnect there, and that's what the business sought to solve.
Well, let's start with where we normally end up, which is with your business, and then we'll move on to the other areas, then, because money is obviously the prime example. So I don't think my 21-year-old and 20-year-old would go for having a go at Henry cards and giving out their Monzo and me putting limits and all that kind of stuff. Understandably, and they get through thousands of pounds, and let's not get into student debt. My elder, who's just finished university, told me how much debt she's got. Absolutely shocking. And 5%, it's criminal. Anyway, let's not rant about that, but it is criminal. So if you've got little Johnny or Henrietta aged 13, I'm listening to this, I think that sounds good, I'll get a Go Henry card for them. So what does it actually do? Does it sort of limit you to £10 or no overdraft? I mean, how does it work? What was your solution to this problem?
It's a prepaid Visa card, a Visa debit card with parental controls. So what that means is a parent sets up an account, they can set up to 4 children underneath it. Each child gets in the UK, a Visa debit card. In the US, it's a MasterCard. And they can set the limits that they want to on it. So they can automatically pay pocket money. They can set up tasks and chores so that the child can learn about earning their pocket money. And they can set limits for how much can be spent. And even if they want to, switch off online spending or switch off cash machines, whatever works for that parent and that child. As simple as that. And from our perspective, that's helping to teach the child about earning, saving, spending, because you've got to learn how to spend it as well. And now we also offer giving, which is small donations to charity.
And has your basic concept remained sort of the same over the last 7 years? And I mean, obviously, well, it developed because you spent 7 years doing it.
Yes, it's grown. We always start from the concept of, are we solving a real family problem rather than creating something esoteric that maybe nobody wants? It's how do we address money family issues in that happen in the home? Lots of suggestions from customers that have made it through into the product, which is fantastic. We rolled out into the US at the beginning of last year, are now growing fast over there as well.
Yes, and the Youth Economy Report, the stat that I noted was that, astronomically enough, the collective pocket money was £4.5 billion.
It's stunning, isn't it?
That's a lot of pocket money.
That's UK.
I think I was very miserly.
And amazingly, so £4.5 billion in 2018, earned by kids aged 6 to 18, £3.9 billion spent, which means they're saving 13%, which is an awful lot more than the UK national savings rate. So,
fantastic.
Maybe we're breeding a generation of savers.
So linking these things in, and as I mentioned before, Monzo have done quite a bit on their money stuff and mental health and all this kind of thing. Let's get to the mental health bit, which is the thing that concerns me most, via social media. So in terms of kids and social media, I think anybody with children knows about it, and I think even if you don't have children, you can imagine that when you're a kid yourself, if you're unlucky, you got a bit bullied at school, but at least if you made it home alive, you're at home alive and you could shut your bedroom door and those bastards were miles away, whereas these days these bastards can follow you into your bedroom, so it's a complete nightmare just from this sort of perspective of bullying, let alone the bigger picture that social media, it's been shown that coming off Facebook makes you less depressed. I myself, again, I gave up Twitter a couple of weeks ago, and actually I found that I've slept better because I've said writing the book all day, get bored of what's on Twitter, blah, blah, blah. I end up just sort of, retweeting and reading stuff that just annoys me, actually, in the usual way. There's a limited sort of humanprogress.org, which I really recommend everybody to follow, that says, actually, everything is getting better, and, all these people coming out of poverty, that's nice, but it doesn't take very long to read, whereas something sort of does your head in. You think, oh, God, look at what's happened there, or the government, or Theresa May, or something. So, actually, sort of, I get older and less wise rather and older and wiser, get older and more stupid. I was sort of spending too much time a day just clicking on stuff that annoyed me. And funnily enough, I sleep better if I don't spend a lot of the day clicking on stuff that annoys me. So where do you, with your sort of much wiser and better research perspective, what's your view on social media and kids and the digital age and all this kind of shit? I mean, I'm really glad that I don't have any children. I mean, I'm really glad I'm not a parent of a sort of baby now, because you think, crikey, what on earth do you do?
I think it's probably important that I say I'm not an expert in this field.
Nobody is, in a way. We're all muddling
through. I am a parent, and I guess I do have opinions, and I know some things that have worked for me and some things that haven't. And obviously, we talk to an awful lot of parents with Go Henry. So from that perspective, yeah, I think it is hugely challenging. One of the biggest challenges is usually our kids are far more tech savvy than we are as parents. And certainly from my perspective, I always felt very much like I was catching up. You know, I'd read about something and think, oh, crikey, are my kids using that? And find out that, yes, they were. And, yes, they'd done certain things and seen certain things. And I think that's massively important as a parent, that you try and keep up. It's not always easy to do so. You learn all kinds of things that you never knew about previously. But at least like that, you're aware of what your child's doing, where they're spending their time, how they're spending their time. I think that's important. I guess the biggest fear for me is how social media appears to have made young people rate themselves. They seem to be constantly grading themselves against the perfection that appears to be portrayed in social media. You know, I've had conversations, my daughter's now 21 and my son's 18, but conversations with my daughter when she was 14, 15, looking at pictures of women on Instagram or anywhere really, on Facebook, on any social media channel, she thought she was ugly and she thought she was fat and she thought she was, you know, it was all of those insecurities that it appears to fuel, because there is this perfection that is put out there. Hopefully, being a little bit older, I'm a lot older, I'm wise enough to be able to take a step back. I can look at a number of friends that I had when I was at school, who I keep in touch with through Facebook. If I believed everything I saw on Facebook, they're having the most amazing lives. They're always happy, they're always in the sun, they're always looking beautiful. They've just got a new job, they've just had a new baby.
But they never post pictures of themselves when it's a wet Wednesday in Wigan and they're soaking and miserable.
I think that's a really important conversation to have with your kids and point that out and kind of drip feed that sort of information through. When children are much younger, as a parent, you have a certain amount of control. You have a lot of control. As they grow up and they go into their
teens, lose it quite rapidly when you say to little Henry Henrietta, you can't have a phone, and little Henry Henrietta says, all my mates have got them. You're just, like, embarrassing me.
Yeah. No, that control disappears or certainly drops as soon as they get to 11, 12, 13. It really does. And my solution to that has always been, perhaps, if I can just drip feed sensible messages, God, doesn't that sound thrilling? But baseline messages about what matters, some of it's got to permeate through. The older they get, the further they get into teenagerdom, they don't want anything to do with parents, they don't want to listen to you, you're old, you're stupid, you know nothing. They come out the other end.
By the age of 55?
Yeah, I'm living in hope. They come out the other end, but if you can just keep drip, drip, drip with pointing out things like people only post the happy stuff, people use the filters, people, it's not real life. That has to help. And that's one way to try and give some kind of real basis and grounding, I think.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, one thing that I was told actually turned out to be quite good advice, which is the teenager stuff, as you say, is very recognisable to anybody who's had teenagers. But actually, that a good piece of advice, which still obtains today for me, actually, which is that as long as you stop expecting them to say anything positive back, or to agree with you, they are actually listening.
No, I so genuinely
you can
believe
say it. They don't say, oh, that's wonderful or whatever. They are listening. And like a couple of episodes ago, we were talking about the tech market and getting jobs in tech and all that kind of stuff. And my daughter just finished university, has got one that I call it's a tech job. She doesn't call it a tech job. But anyway, now, listeners of the podcast might assume that I know a little bit about this world, having spent the last 5 years talking about it and editing it non-stop. But they might think that, but my daughter didn't. So, you know, can't, but I think that actually she may have listened to some of the things I said, even if she did the opposite. But at least it went in there, because in the end she ended up doing what I suggested would fit her best, which is working for a relatively small indie firm rather than being cannon fodder. But she did that via me sort of suggesting these things and saying, look, it's up to you, darling, you make the decision, but actually this is how it is, and big sort of factories, and it's how it is in the small ones, and da, 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 and then sort of, you know, heading towards the big factories. Not necessarily out of perversity, but I think just because she didn't somehow, I mean, obviously, what's your dad know kind of stuff, whereas all your mates at university, oh, well, look, we're 21, ain't they? But in the end, yes, fortunately, by the will of the Allah, she was diverted away from big co's and ended up in the small co's. And I'd be very happy if she worked in big co's, just I know what she's like and it wouldn't be suited. So, but anyway, the point being that even if your children aren't apparently listening to you, and they may not be listening to you, at least they hear you. And those seeds may have fallen on stony ground, but a little bit later they may grow. So that's one aspect of thinking about it. The other aspect of thinking about it, just sort of, you know, from first principles and recognising what you say, which is that when they're little, they listen to you. Actually, I've had this conversation before many times, actually, with other people, that what you want is girls below the age of 10 and boys above the age of 10. You've got one of both, so you make sure or not. Because especially from Dan's perspective, when girls are below 10, Daddy's wonderful, and he can fix anything, and he knows everything, fantastic. And by the time girls are 12, he's a complete idiot, and they can't understand what they've done to deserve such a father who knows nothing about anything important. And certainly, when they're little, little boys are complete tearaways, are just trash a place, you know, five-year-olds or seven-year-olds, you have a sort of party, they'll just sort of be swinging from the lampshades. Whereas the girls will be sitting around, sort of being quite civilised and all that kind of stuff. So yes, you want to swap them. But in terms of the kind of attention to parent or attention to peer group or attention to school, one of the things that we haven't spoken about yet, but which is quite an important angle, and it's probably been like this for a very long time, I mean centuries, that other adults, other authority figures become more influential than the parents. It's part of them sort of moving away. You know, what your teacher says, you know, you may like your teacher or may not, but actually school has an increasing amount of influence, 5, 10, 15 or so. So clearly, going back to sort of solving this challenge of ensuring that children get adequate exposure but don't get too damaged, and they are being damaged at the moment by tech, the consequences of tech, surely school has got quite a large role to play in this. Now, going back to my kids, I remember when they had IT lessons at school, the teachers knew fuck all. They really did. And they were told stupid stuff like HTML stands for hypertext markup language. I mean, you know, meanwhile, they were Snapchatting each other under the desk.
Yes.
So where do schools fit into sort of solving this problem?
I've been a governor at my local secondary school for almost 8 years and still involved with the school now. And one thing I do know is just how much schools have to impart to kids across the course of the day. You know, there is a huge list of curriculum required content that has to be put across to them. So yes, of course schools have a role to play. They deliver digital education, online safety, social media education, all of that as part of, I can never remember it, PSHE, something like that. I once heard somebody call it stuff your parents are supposed to teach you, which made me smile. So that tends to be the year tutor, the class tutor, or a teacher at the end, a non-specialist teacher imparting that kind of thing. Great, it's fantastic that schools do it. It means that there is a baseline of education going on there. But I do feel that it's, you know, it's down to parents as well. We shouldn't be passing all responsibility onto the schools.
Yes, I was more just thinking of a pincer movement.
Yeah,
you know, when they're five, they'll listen to you. When they're 15, they'll listen to teacher a little bit more.
Yes. And peers. I think, you know, one of the things that's clear, and we, in building Go Henry and looking at all the different age groups that we look at, the young end of the age group, the sort of six to nines, that's all about parents. And the parent is the key influence in their life. Then it gradually starts to transition into a mix of parents and friends. And teachers at school, very influential people like that, or maybe the coach at their sports club. By the time they're 15, 16, so it's all about their friends. That's who they're listening to. So you've got, as a parent, you've got a key point in their life, I guess, when you can set some good messages in place. And, you know, you can put rules in place, like when they can have screen time, whether they take their phone into their bedroom with them at night, or whether they have a television in their bedroom at night, or those kind of things that can help.
Yes, and the other thing that occurs to me is that the phenomena of tech are changing at the same time. So I think in particular social media is changing a lot, and quite rightly I feel it's under massive bombardment. Just recently in the States, from Congress and the Senate, Google and Facebook and Twitter, they're blatant political bias. I mean, all this hysteria in the last election, you know, for sort of a few grand of Russian ads and that kind of stuff. But there's blatant bias by Facebook and Twitters and Googles and changing the rankings and all this kind of material. And they have this exemption from being a platform or a publisher. And I hope that that won't last very long. And having been writing about the history of the companies, I mean, this is centuries old, of course. I mean, the East India lobby in Parliament over here was extremely powerful for a long time, keeping the sort of East India Company going and out of political harm's way and all that kind of stuff. And the social media has been very powerful. Stix Hexenhammer is one of the indie content people I follow on YouTube. He has a good theory about why they haven't cut back on Facebook so much so far, which is that too many congressmen, Mark Zuckerberg has their sort of dick pics filed away. And whenever they say, well, actually, I think it's a bit like they did about Bill Gates, I think it's about time you fuck off, you know, put someone else in charge and be a bit more benign. So, well, yeah, sure, OK, but actually, let's just release a few things like that. So it is taking some time, and the powers that be do move slow in the States, but it is a vast monopoly, it is abusive, and as I think Ted Cruz pointed out, Google is so important as a verb to Google. 90% of searches in the States are done by Google, and YouTube is very important as well, and they massively bias the results. All this stuff is the kind of thing that if it had existed when the Americans left the parent themselves and put a constitution in, they'd have said freedom of speech, freedom from the government and freedom from companies, because companies are vast, powerful organisations these days. They didn't. So I think there's an evolution going on there, and I'm slightly hopeful that it will improve.
I think there is. I think more regulation will come. I think that really the danger is that the industry, the technology, has almost run away with us, and so many people had not a clue just how widely data that we'd shared with these giant platforms was being shared and how it was being used. And again, coming back to kids, that's a really important message to put across to them, thinking about what information they're putting out there and who it might be used by and where it's stored and what it might look like in 20 years' time.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, again, we're going back to sort of kids being more tech-savvy than the parents. I mean, going back to the girls, my younger daughter was... Her and her buddies were first adopters of Snapchat. And I think that already at that stage, which would have been, I don't know, 5-10 years ago, they were very aware that if you put some stuff on Facebook, some employer would say, oh, look, they were saying whatever you said, where Snapchat was sort of burning. So they were sort of ahead of everyone and spotting that. And the other thing, actually, with girls and boys, I noticed is that on the rare occasion I could actually see out the corner of my eye what was going on, girls use Snapchat quite a lot. To your point about presenting highlight reels and making yourself that you look like some supermodel all the time, they quite often use it just to pull funny faces with each other, or stupid faces, to look stupid on that, which you couldn't do in the public internet. You wouldn't want something looking like a complete prat. But actually, they like pratting around with each other because they're still children. Yes. So, you know, there are all these mechanisms. Right, OK, so I think we've had a little sort of tour d'horizon here. I hope none of the listeners who are stressing about it were hoping for nice, simple, clear answers. I don't think society has got them yet, but I think that it is always worth us all thinking about the challenging problems, even if there isn't a solution. I watched something yesterday, I must have been bored, about the ongoing attempts to square the circle between sort of quantum gravity and relativity, quantum and relativity being incompatible. People have been on that case now for the better part of a century. They still haven't fixed it, but the art of attacking a sort of a Gordian knot or something that's unsolvable is meritorious in itself. And as a parent, you have to do something.
Yeah.
So I hope that the listeners out there, it's giving them some fuel for this kind of some thinks and some ideas and brought it to the fore of their minds. It's very easy, actually, to maybe, especially when the teenagers start just turning a blind eye to the whole thing. Maybe that's a libertarian approach anyway. Sort of, by and large, most children manage to get over it and they sort of learn in the end what's good and what's bad about it. So anyway, before we wrap up the show, I'd like to thank all your listeners out there. For those of you who aren't parents today, you can be relieved that you don't have this issue to deal with. For those of you who are parents, it depends on the stage, but good luck at the various stages. Also like to thank my brand partner for the podcast, Smart Pension, who are far, secure and free. Check out their UK workplace pensions at autoenrollment.co.uk. So Louise, we mentioned actually GoHenry and a little bit about what you do and how it works, and obviously those people out there who are concerned that their children deal with this derealised money with a sense of that actually there are limits and it's finite and it's controlled and that kind of stuff, can check you guys out. But in terms of the many listeners standing outside your window at the moment, what messages would you like to give them about GoHenry?
I guess we are growing incredibly fast at the moment. I mentioned earlier on that we launched in the US about a year and a half ago, and that part of the business is growing fast.
You say you're about 130-odd people?
We're 130-odd people, split between Farnborough and Angel, where we are today in London, operating across the US, the UK. We've got close to 750,000 active customers now. And as I said, growing fast. For businesses out there who might be listening, we're keen to talk to partners in the US because we're looking to put our foot down and really accelerate the growth in the US. And obviously for any parents out there who might be interested, gohenry.com, you'll find out more.
And as well as appearing on the immensely prestigious London FinTech podcast, you were saying that you've appeared on the slightly less prestigious Daily Mail recently, where they were sort of doing a profile of you, and you're obviously B2C. For those listeners out there who wish to get 700,000 clients themselves, just sort of briefly, how do you get 700,000 clients, or how did you get 700,000 clients?
Gosh, it took us one at a time. It took us a little while to find out the best way to do that. I spent a lot of time standing at events where parents might be with their kids, so things like sports tournaments and shopping malls and school fairs, and then digital advertising really took off. And our main two channels are word of mouth, so we have an incredibly strong referral stream of new customers coming in, and digital advertising. And that's what works for us.
Good. Well, I'm very glad to have this conversation. I say it's sort of been under the water for the last 5 years, occasionally surfacing in the odd podcast. I've heard the odd horror story myself, like we all have in recent years, so it's a stress, even if it doesn't affect you directly. And as I mentioned, money and mental health are very strongly correlated, and it can certainly cause stress in families if people, kids suddenly go spending thousands of pounds. So I think it's very worthy and worthwhile what you're doing out there, and I wish you every success in the future. And maybe once you've conquered the world and conquered money, you can take on some of these other aspects of children and tech. I think there's no shortage of material, and in a sense, actually, I don't know where this is, maybe just sort of let us know, but in a sense I'm slightly surprised there isn't more of this stuff around. I mean, I've been immersed in this for years. I get millions of emails coming in, and next to none of them actually in years. I mean, I'm talking thousands and thousands of people applying to be on the show. Next to none of them talk about kids.
It's a forgotten part of the economy. Seriously, it's banks are not doing it. Schools are doing their best. It's a niche, but it's an important niche. £4.5 billion last year. It's a significant part of the economy.
Good. Well, good for you taking on an area that isn't sort of overfished, as it were. And you're doing an immense social good, as well as creating a business and revenues and costs and all that kind of stuff. So I wish you every success in the future.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you have consulting, advisory/non-exec, or media needs in the FS or fintech space, get in touch with me at mike@londonfintechpodcast.com.
We could sit in a bender all day, watching the firelight dance, watching the firelight dance. We could walk in the mountains before dawn, watching a happy moon ride, watching a happy moon ride. To come away from the city, but with the tarmac so dead and the people so sad. Come away from the city, but with the faces so grey, with the pain of the everyday. Like the mountains and the trees, can you see what I mean? Can you see what I mean? We fit in between the earth and the sky. Kiss the city goodbye. Wave the city goodbye. Wave the city goodbye. Wave the city goodbye. Watch the firelight dance with me. 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 Watch the firelight dance.